two main things. One is an EU-wide living wage, and the other is an EU-wide Green New Deal. And that would mean huge investment in renewable energies and energy efficiency, which would lower people's household bills. But at the same time, it would help tackle climate change by insulating people's homes and putting solar panels on their roofs and that sort of thing.
It's interesting actually seeing just over the past couple of years that despite not being heavily represented in European Parliament, but also in Westminster as well, that actually green policies are being taken up by the other parties. I mean, does that actually feel as though, although the Green Party is still there, that it's becoming less relevant?
Well, we are the largest Remain party out of all the other UK Remain parties. So we've got more MEPs than any other Remain party in this election. So if people want to stop Brexit, then they should vote for the Green Party. But I think, you know, in terms of the political agenda and climate change, people see that in the European Parliament, Greens are a huge force to be reckoned with. We've got over 50 MEPs across the whole of Europe working together collectively on issues of inequality, poverty, climate change, and all these issues cross our borders.
You automatically mentioned Remain. I mean, your manifesto does talk about stopping Brexit, remaining in the EU. Does that mean that there is a message within the Green Party for people who do actually want Brexit, but who still feel strongly about green issues?
I don't think so, really. I think that,
okay,
you know,
that's honest.
We don't try and skew our messaging to fit different audiences like some of the other parties might. We have integrity, and our message is quite clearly that we want to remain in the European Parliament. Of course, by voting for MEPs, that doesn't do that automatically. But what it does do is it sends a very clear message to the establishment parties that we need a people's vote. And Caroline Lucas has been the first party leader who's really driven that agenda.
So if that doesn't take place, let's say, as the polls are suggesting, that, for example, the Brexit Party, which obviously is very pro-Brexit, if they were to get the most seats, does that mean then that there is a strong message against a second referendum and against remaining in the EU?
No, because I think you can't win this election. In the South East, there are 10 seats, for example. The Brexit company are not going to get all 10 of those seats.
But then how do you send a strong message?
I think
if you can't win, you can't lose.
Because this is a proportional representation election, people can vote with their heads and their hearts. They do not need to vote tactically. But if you're a Remain voter, then vote for the party that is Remain, and that you think also chimes with your beliefs. So if climate change and ending poverty and inequalities is important to you, then I would say vote for the Green Party. And it will be that collective percentage for Remain parties that people will be looking at. And I am confident that that will be more than the Brexit company's percentage.
You mentioned a second referendum. How would that actually work?
Well, you know, Caroline Lucas was the first party leader to call for a people's vote. I think that that is needed now. I mean, Parliament is at loggerheads and it's quite clear that nothing is going to happen between now and October.
But what would actually be on the ballot paper?
Well, I think that's for discussion. I think it will be whatever deal the government wants to negotiate, so that it wouldn't be just about remain or leave, but that leave has to be defined. And I think that was one of the real problems with the referendum before. I mean, there were lots of problems with the referendum before because it was mired in cheating and lies. But I think one of the other main problems was that it was a very simplistic version and no one knew what leave meant then. I think there's a clearer idea
now. But you're still talking
about
breaking this down to a binary votes, remain versus some kind of deal. I mean, not only are there going to be lots of people who do support Brexit who would like a no deal, other options on that ballot paper, but how do you actually get away from that simplifying a complicated issue down to a binary the second time around?
Well, I think now we're in receipt of far greater information and we've had huge debates about it, and really that is what needed to happen before any referendum. So I think people are in a different place now. They've seen the chaos that it's caused and the chaos that leaving Europe is likely to cause, not least for the economy, with the pound likely to just plummet further and interest rates rise. So I think that even just from an economic point of view solely, it doesn't make sense to leave Europe.
If you were speaking to somebody who had voted for Brexit in 2016 and then in a second referendum, perhaps this year, perhaps next year, still voted for Brexit, but the numbers went the other way, what would you say to that person to actually tell them that something positive has happened here?
Well, democracy didn't end in 2016. I think that there were real problems with the last referendum, not least because you only needed a simple percentage to win. And no civilized democracy does that, even in the States. And I'm half American. They don't do that. They need a two-thirds majority. But I think we would have to keep the same rule in terms of simple majority for this referendum.
And why?
And because I don't think that you can change that dramatically this time when last time I think there would be uproar otherwise.
Do you mean there would be uproar because you think that Remain wouldn't win with a two-thirds majority?
Well, I actually think, and the polls suggest that Remain has well over two-thirds at the moment. So
then
I think that
confident.
We would.
Stick to your principles then if you believe that should be
well,
the policy.
I mean, I just think that people would, they wouldn't want to see massive changes in the rules. But I would like to see, for example, the 3 million Europeans living here and the 3 million Brits living in Europe be able to vote in a referendum because that is going to affect them. Also 16 and 17-year-olds who weren't allowed to vote in the other referendum, they really need to be part of the people's vote because it really feels...
So you change the rules for them, but not for a two-thirds
well,
majority?
Well, I think the two... Well, perhaps maybe I have, you know, for the two-thirds majority, maybe that is something that people want, but it's not something that's been discussed a huge amount. The focus really has been on European citizens, Brits abroad, 16 and 17-year-olds, and what's going to be on the ballot paper. And I think because of that, there's not a huge appetite for a two-thirds majority this time.
But just... I suppose returning to that point, because I think it is quite crucial, one of the criticisms back in 2016 and in the years following it was that leading politicians had abandoned the 48%, the Remain voting part of the country. If that was switched around in another referendum, how would you bring along the 48% who had voted for Brexit but lost that time?
Well, I think Caroline's really led the way on this. I mean, she has this Dear Leavers Twitter account, and she has been travelling the length and breadth of the country and setting up citizens' assemblies to speak to people who had voted to leave. And it's crucial that politicians listen to the other side of the debate, but to both sides of it. And I think a lot of the reasons why people voted to leave are around the causes of Brexit, which are to do with jobs, poverty, finances, and those sorts of things. And I'm proud to stand on a European-wide manifesto, which helps to address those causes of Brexit.
There is an economic impact to many of the policies that you as a party suggest as well. I mean, even things like a levy on frequent flyers. I mean, that's going to hit small businesses and also potentially, you know, tourist companies, us, the consumer as well. Economic impacts are not presumably then always bad for you.
Well, I think the economic impact that I'm most worried about is austerity. And as I said earlier, that's not just a word. It's actually killing people.
Sure, that's avoiding the question, though. I mean, the economic impact of your policies.
I think the economic impact of our policies is about reinvesting money into the economy to kickstart that economy. So, for example, in the 1930s, that happened and to great success. Here, that's not happening. And we're still in a very tricky economic situation because of that. The political ideology of austerity is failing everyone, including the economy.
Back to the policies, I mean, things like a frequent flyer levy. Would you want businesses to be flying less around Europe, around the world?
Of course, we all need to change the way we live and work. We have 10 years to combat climate change and the biodiversity crisis that we've got in front of us. I mean, the best time to act on that was in the 1970s, but that didn't happen. So the second best time to act on that is today. And so for the future, and I've got a little boy who's going to have to deal with the consequences of those crises, and they're going to be quite huge. I mean, in the global north, so here we're talking about shocking summers, just scorching summers and flooding. And in the global south, we're talking about drought and starvation and the chaos which will ensue and the inequalities issues and migration to just live. And it's really scary to think that his generation are going to have to deal with this. And so we must combat it, whether people like it or not. not.
But it is arguable that the EU has not done as much as it could to help. I mean, it's the wealthiest part of the world. And yet, I mean, Fortress Europe, the lockdown of migration, but also in your manifesto also speaks out about things like European food flooding other markets.
Well, I think that's why we need more Greens in Europe. And without that, we're not going to have the ambitious targets that we need. You know, we need to have a zero carbon Europe by 2030. We need to shift onto 100% renewable energies by 2050. These are real ambitions that can be realised with the correct political will.
But not without a bit of pain for individuals.
I don't think it needs to be like that. I think that a lot of the time individuals want to make the right choices, but they are not encouraged, they are not incentivized to do that. So for example, it might be far, far cheaper, four times cheaper to travel from London to Glasgow by plane than it is by train. So you can understand just from the bare economics why people would take the plane and not the train. The whole system is the wrong way round, and it's important that people make changes, but they can only make those changes if they're legislated for. And the best legislation that we've got on environmental issues and social justice issues is in Europe. It's certainly not in the UK.